Ethical concerns over new recommendations for HIV testing appear to focus on implementation rather than the recommendations themselves. That's according to authors of an article in the April 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. The article is entitled, An Ethical Evaluation of the 2006 Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Recommendations for HIV Testing in Healthcare Settings. Dr. Teresa Salata is a co-author. She is an assistant professor of philosophy and a research ethicist at Wheaton College, and she joins us now from Norton, Massachusetts. Dr. Salata, from your perspective, what was the thinking behind the CDC's recommendations?
They had several concerns. One is that the policy had been to target HIV testing. This meant that when a person presented in certain healthcare settings, if they admitted to engaging in some risky behavior, or if the doctor had some reason to suspect that this person was engaged in behavior that put them at risk for contracting HIV, the doctor at that point offered HIV testing. And this happened, the testing continued in this targeted way for years. Found in recent years is that many people were being diagnosed with HIV at a very late stage in the sickness. So they were only learning that they were HIV positive, even though they had been that for years. And I think partly the concern was if we could identify people who are HIV positive earlier on, then because there are highly active antiretroviral treatments and that they're widely available and they're associated with improved health outcomes, slower clinical progression of disease, and reduced mortality, it would be worthwhile to identify these people earlier on.
What are you most concerned about when it comes to charges that these recommendations are unethical?
My biggest worry would be associated with the recommendation that HIV testing be opt-out, and that is that heretofore a patient presenting to a doctor would be asked by the doctor, would you like to be tested for HIV today? Or we could test you for HIV today, would you like that? And a patient would say yes or no. The opt-out recommendation is this, that a doctor would say to a person presenting in a healthcare setting something to the effect of, we are going to test you for HIV testing today unless you refuse, which puts the burden on the patient to say no. And the concern that people have had about this recommendation is that people might be tested without their knowledge, that somehow they're not going to understand that testing is optional, so they can say no. That's the concern. We don't want people to be tested without knowing that they're being tested. It's important to understand that you're being tested and what the risks associated with being tested are. Now, we had concerns about the way the debate was carried on in the literature. And those are different sorts of concerns than the actual ethical concerns that I think are raised by the recommendations. And those concerns, I think predominantly that there was some misinformation out there. So some people were saying people are going to be tested without their knowledge, as if this was what the recommendations required, and that's not at all what the recommendations are calling for. People are supposed to be informed that they will be tested. And a related issue is that the ethical problems the critics have noticed are problems with the implementation of the guidelines and not the guidelines themselves. The difference is this. If the guideline were inherently problematic, morally problematic, so that, for example, if the guideline said we are going to test people without their knowledge, right, you might think that's an inherently morally problematic recommendation in the sense that it might violate some right that people have to privacy. It might be coercive because it's forcing testing on people and they don't have a say in it. It's a very different thing to say as the recommendations do, testing is voluntary in the sense that you can say no to it. And the critics have pointed to, well, maybe people are going to be tested without their knowledge. And that could happen, and that would be a problem. But the concern then isn't that the guideline itself is morally problematic, but that it won't be implemented properly. And the difference this makes is that if the problem is with the guideline itself, then you need to change the guideline. You don't want a guideline or a recommendation, that violates people's rights. If the problem is not with the guideline itself, but with the implementation of it, then you might be able to get around the problem by introducing safeguards, educating people about what their rights are, educating providers about how to make the opt-out offer. So it's important to diagnose exactly where the ethical problem is, because if it's in the problem itself, if it's in the recommendation itself, then the only way to change the guideline altogether. Whereas if the problem lies in the implementation, we might be able to intervene with regulations or oversight, and so if to ensure that recommendation is implemented properly, so patients are aware that they are free to say no.
So these were the issues you found in your ethical examination of these concerns.
Yes, indeed. And another concern related to what the debate as it played out in the literature was that people, many critics identified potential problems, but didn't look at the problems in context. So you might say something, you might recognize that, yes, it's a problem that doctors might be cavalier about testing and so be insensitive to patients' needs if testing becomes routine, right? They might become cavalier about it. You might think that people will think that testing is required, and if they think that, they may be reluctant to seek medical care at all because they'll be trying to avoid this test. It's another thing to draw from that, from either of those supposed facts, that the guidelines are problematic and we shouldn't implement them, right? You have to say, well, here are possible negative outcomes if the recommendations are implemented improperly. And you have to, I think, consider those in the context of, well, what are the benefits that might be accrued if the policy is implemented? And an examination of the total sets of possible benefits and the total set of risks should be assessed, and whether implementing the recommendations is either required by respecting rights that people have or is prohibited in virtue of rights that people have. And that the move from here's a possible problem to the conclusion that therefore these recommendations shouldn't be implemented is a problematic move. And I think what we try to do in our paper is to the possible benefits and the possible risks and the possible rights that might be violated, and then to look at them in context and weigh them against each other.
Stigma is still a factor when it comes to HIV testing. Does that complicate the debate?
Stigma is a very real problem. And I don't have a sense of myself of exactly how prevalent it is, but HIV-related stigma and discrimination are real and serious problems, and we can and we should fight stigma and discrimination as they occur. We don't reduce the stigma by not testing people for HIV, and I think part of the hope that the CDC and people have had with these recommendations is that stigma might actually be reduced. Before, HIV testing was treated in what was called an exceptional way. It was treated differently from other infectious disease conditions. It was treated specially for stigma and discrimination. But today, we have treatments. people are, the HIV knowledge and awareness is much greater. And so the procedures that made HIV testing special, like the separate informed consent and the required counseling, the thought is once we reduce the exceptionalism, if HIV testing becomes more routine, that it, the stigma associated with it will go down. Like, we're all tested for HIV. It won't seem perhaps as such a big deal.
You suggest in your article that a balancing act must be achieved, that possible harms associated with the implementation of CDC's recommendations should be balanced against those associated with maintaining the status quo. What do you mean by that?
As with many interventions, there are possible benefits and possible risks. And we should look at the net set of benefits and risks and not just one benefit or one risk, but also we can compare if what's happening with regard to HIV and patients in the context of healthcare with recommendations and guidelines that were in effect before 2006, and then what's likely to happen after 2006. So as we were just talking about stigma, treating HIV testing differently from testing for other infectious diseases, maybe making an exception of it, maybe that contributed to stigma. And so the new recommendations might reduce stigma. Again, not testing people for HIV doesn't reduce stigma in any way. So I think we need to compare how things would be under the earlier policy with the new policy, and how we expect things to be under the new policy. And I think the concern is, since many people were being diagnosed with HIV at very late stages of the illness, the targeted testing approach wasn't working. It was missing many people. And a big benefit of the new recommendations, if they are implemented properly, is that more people will have their HIV diagnosed earlier on, and that could result in, if they change their behaviors, a reduction in the spread of HIV. And as long as they can access treatment, it would also be beneficial to them.
Dr. Teresa Salata is an assistant professor of philosophy and research ethicist at Wheaton College. She is co-author of an article, An Ethical Evaluation of the 2006 Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Recommendations for HIV Testing in Healthcare Settings, in the April 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.